Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Everything is a Primary Source podcast. I got to tell you, it's good to be back. I hope you've enjoyed the holidays and that 2023 has started off as good, no, better than expected. Things here at Everything is a Primary Source headquarters have been going swimmingly the last few weeks as I haven't slowed down with collecting pop culture artifacts to be used to learn about history. Season 2 picks back up with a short that was recorded back in October of last year at Defiant Records and Craft Beer in Laconia, New Hampshire. What a perfect spot for a night of podcast karaoke. Not only did I bring a slew of pop culture selections for taproom guests to choose from, but directly in front of me were stacks upon stacks of vinyl to browse and buy. My first on-the-spot guest that night was Bob, and he gravitated towards a copy of Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited that I brought. So Bob on Bob, a take on Dylan's 1966 follow-up album Blonde on Blonde, is an alternate title to this episode. Anyway, the Bob who podcasted with me had his fingers on the pulse of the Everything is a Primary Source podcast. He knew exactly what I was up to. Just like the Bob who recorded the album in the mid-1960s understood the heartbeat of the youth in his era. Our conversation moved along like a rolling stone so well that I decided to make it two parts. Take a listen to part one, and if you want to hear the second part early, become a patron at patreon.com. All right. Hey, Bob, are you ready to go? And yeah, you go ahead and take that seat, and you know how that microphone works because you have one at home, and the closer the better. So you have selected a Bob Dylan record.
Yes.
And what exactly was it about Highway 61 Revisited that caught your eye tonight?
Well, first off, I'm a huge Dylan fan, so it's a kind of a no-brainer a little bit. It's my favorite personal Dylan album, but also one of the most popular ones he's ever put out, and in the context of history, a very important album in rock and roll history.
Yeah, it's early, early Dylan. You know, people always think about the different ages and stages of Bob Dylan. And,
absolutely.
Yet the title, I mean, so it's I guess early rock and roll, early folk. The title is very deep. It's not clear exactly what it is. It's not like, let's go surfing or,
right, something like that.
It's very...
And that was what rock and roll was up until that point.
Right.
In the early 60s, the Beach Boys and the Beatles were just kind of starting out. So they were the teeny bopper band. And so rock didn't have any of that gravitas or whatever. That
yeah.
You would later see probably in excess with the 70s prog rock, but...
Right. And even the album cover... is it looks like he's backstage and just somebody snapped a candid photo of him, that he's not posing for anything. He doesn't have to go back to the Beach Boys comparison, he doesn't have a surfboard under his arm and standing and nothing. I love the Beach Boys, and they went on to do some pretty incredible out there things, but so the question that I decided that we should talk about is, what was the maker's role or status in society? And you were just saying that Bob Dylan, if I'm not mistaken, I think Bob Dylan has a direct connection to the day that the music died with Buddy Holly, and
Big
I think
Bopper.
He was there that night, the last concert of that winter tour.
That I didn't know, but yes.
Before he changed his name to Bob Dylan, I think he was in attendance to that. And,
oh, wow, okay, yes.
I could be wrong about that, but, he was, in other words, on the front lines of early rock and roll.
Yeah, definitely. Well, with this album in particular, of course, Dylan's role in history, I think, is up until that point was the folk movement
right.
of the 60s. So Joan Baez and people like that. And he was at the forefront of that, right? So everyone kind of, and of course the Vietnam War was just kind of really starting to take over. And we were really about to dump a lot of effort into that. And so, of course, the folk was kind of representative of the counterculture at that time and stuff. So he was like the voice of the generation, right? He was the kind of guy that the youth of America was looking at. when they wanted something deeper than I Want to Hold Your Hand,
yeah,
or that kind of stuff, which was permeating popular radio or music at the time.
So he was really almost like a bridge artist between, because I think a lot of times people, and we're here in like a hall of rock and roll,
yes,
at Defiant Records, it's like, you know, we picture rock and roll always being renegade music and being the, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries and being the rebel music and all that. But it wasn't really that way early on.
No, I mean, not at all.
I mean, I guess maybe for the times Buddy Holly looked weird or something,
well,
and
I would
made
say,
louder music, but
I would say Little Richard probably,
yeah,
was the guy that was scaring people. You know?
And,
but maybe,
you know,
for different reasons than we would consider it scary today. But at that time, he certainly was like nothing anyone had,
right,
seen before.
But and the things he was singing about was just, you know, really, you know, the same thing that all songs are written about,
yeah,
up until that point. So
love.
Nothing really,
yeah,
you know, like when we look at some of the song listings off of Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited, Like a Rolling Stone,
yep,
Tombstone Blues, It Takes a Lot to Laugh, It Takes a Train to Cry,
yes,
from a Buick 6 Ballad of Thin Man, Queen Jane, approximately. That, I mean, that's not an album, a song title that you hear.
It doesn't roll off the,
know,
tongue.
Right. It's, you know, he's definitely a Brit. And then here's, you know, photographs of him playing the piano and setting up his electric guitar and all that stuff. So, you know, the folk artists were really, they were the renegades. They were,
yeah,
the out there.
They were
ones.
The counterculture. They were it outgrew from the beatniks of the 50s, and that was the kind of natural extension from there. But yeah, they were looking to Dylan, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, this was his first album that he really was kind of full in on the electric side of things, which of course to the folk fans at the time was considered a major betrayal.
Right.
You know, because he was supposed to be the, you know, the, again, the voice of this generation.
I don't know if it, I think it was Graham Nash. I think I heard him say, one time he was quoted to say, rock and roll is folk music because it's music of the people. It's untrained.
Yeah.
You know, I always get a little bit kind of weirded out when I hear things about like School of Rock, not the movie necessarily, but like, you know, yeah, where kids
the
go
concept
and train to be,
yeah,
and they learn, you know, reading sheet music, and I'm like, no, rock and roll doesn't come from, and folk music doesn't come from sheet music.
Right.
Which, incidentally, in front of you, I have a Duran Duran sheet music from the 80s,
that's
if anybody
awesome
else is interested in looking at that one. But it doesn't come from there. It comes, yeah, from here, the heart, you know, it comes from your mind.
And, of course, the blues, too.
Yeah.
Same kind of deal.
It's,
right,
poetry.
Yeah,
it's,
and absolutely.
It's, you know, for lack of a better term, it's almost like street music in a way.
Yeah, no, it's lived experience, right?
Yeah.
It's that coming through. And
so
the rock and roll, for sure.
You've seen Dylan a couple times, you said?
Yes, absolutely.
And would you say that, you know, more recently, did you see him long ago or
no,
fairly recently?
No, the first time I saw him was 1995. And then I saw him again probably 2008-ish, something like that. So a little bit of a span in between there.
So not like a, you know, a different kind of, probably other people, you know, that grew up with Bob Dylan and understand him to be, you know, what he is, iconic.
Yeah. Yes.
And whereas here, he was still building his status.
Yeah, right. And it was only in the folk music side of things. When he went electric, that opened him up to a whole new audience, obviously. But also, again, rock music, the Surfing USA, that kind,
yeah,
of stuff. He really lent that, you know, these heavy lyrics that meant something other than just I want to hold your hand,
right,
or that the typical teenage stuff you were getting before. So he kind of bridges that and gives legitimacy, I think, to rock at that time.
It says something about the maturing of the audience too,
yeah,
because
they were growing,
you know,
up with this.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
They were, it wasn't like rock and roll music was just for people ages 12 to 14, you know. It was originally,
yeah,
and then
right,
they grew up with it, and so, yeah, rock and roll matured with it.
Yeah.
You know, you were saying that one of the times you saw Bob Dylan was with Willie Nelson.
Yes.
And him, he's one of the Highwaymen, right?
And
so I always, you know, years ago, and I have to say this, it was before Walk the Line came out.
Yes.
Because that created a whole new generation of Johnny Cash fans. But
yes, absolutely. absolutely.
It was like a few years before that, a friend of mine turned me on to Johnny Cash. And it didn't take long before I realized and found out just how much Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan worked together.
Yeah.
That they were, they collaborated a lot. They borrowed each other's songs a lot.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
Cash really saw him as the voice of the youth.
Yep.
You know, I don't know the age differential between the two, but I think it was at least a couple years. Cash
easy,
was older.
Yeah.
And, you know, that seemed to be helping along the status, because by that time Johnny Cash had established himself.
Yeah.
And had, you know, he was on that opening crest of rock and roll artists that then went more the country direction.
Yeah.
And added, would you say that would add legitimacy to Dylan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Johnny Cash was doing things at that time that no one else was doing, and I bring up like Folsom Prison, you know, yeah, or Live at San Quentin.
Right.
Right. He goes in there to play for criminals, like people, right, in jail, which was a forgotten population in this country, probably even still to this day, yeah, but certainly back then. And
a captive audience, I hate to say.
Captive audience, right? You know, I'm a musician also, and yes, captive audience, absolutely. But yeah, I think that, you know, to have someone like Johnny Cash see that population and be an advocate for them,
right,
I think, is what he has in common with Bob Dylan.
You're right. And I you know, I think of Bob Dylan's work with The Hurricane, that song.
Yes, another
and,
one, yes.
You know, and he wrote that for the name
Reuben Carter.
That's right, Reuben Carter. So, you know, he was in prison, and I think about Bob Dylan at the March on Washington,
yeah,
that him and Joan Baez,
yep,
and I think one other folk artist were present, and they, and I remember showing that one time to my class. Hi.
Just the wife.
Oh, excellent.
The wife is just going to say, I love the song The Hurricane by Bob Dylan, because it really accentuated that time period when he was doing what he needed to do as far as giving a message to the people. And
it's absolutely a message song, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not a 3-minute long verse, chorus, verse, chorus. It's like 8 minutes of a story.
It was a story. It was,
you know,
it was someone's life, and he documented it well. And I'm Carol, by the way.
And you're up next, by the way.
No, I'm not.
I think about, because I remember seeing that movie in the theater, and it says a lot about Bob Dylan's place,
yeah,
that they, of all the things that, you know, that I'm sure the song helped prompt the movie being made in the first place.
Oh, yeah, I would say,
title.
Yep.
You know, that,
yep,
it wasn't just, yep, you know, so his...
That's the power of music to... And again, we go back to the theme, which is like, yes, the maturation of rock and roll,
yeah,
where it has meaning for people now. They're not afraid to tackle these topics that are not easy to tackle.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, and it's almost gone to the point now where it's not even just rock and roll that does it. Just
rap
pop music in general.
Rap music comes to mind,
yeah,
like immediately.
And,
right,
you know... I'm assuming he is, but is Bob Dylan in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
He was probably early class.
He may have been one of the first ones.
Yeah, like that, even before they had the museum set up. It was,
yes,
just like,
absolutely.
And, you know, the hard thing to do about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, unlike, you know, like a Basketball Hall of Fame or any of the sports Hall of Fames, where it's like, did you make this many wins? Did you, you know, did how many points?
It's very subjective.
It is very subjective. And yet, I think it probably has a lot to do with how much of a difference he made in the music. And the same thing goes, I think, like Run DMC is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And when they got inducted, people were like, but they're a rap group.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's not the actual sound of the music, which they did use a lot of rock sounds in their music, but yeah, it's not the sound, it's the attitude, it's,
yeah,
what you did.
Yep.
And so, I mean, over time, it's going to essentially be the Pop Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you're right. There's like Run DMC and Donna Summers in there and stuff. And those aren't names that leap to your mind when you say, yeah, rock and roll.
Right.
But they also had, you know, especially Run DMC, that kind of, again, counterculture kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they had something to say. And they're all early rap music, too.
Yeah. And that's what's funny is that, like, I remember, like, you know, punk rock is like my favorite kind of music.
So, yeah.
And that's... and the Ramones being, you know, arguably the founders of that kind of sound. Yeah. But they were middle-class kids from Queens. They weren't, you know, from the city streets. Whereas, arguably, the London scene was much more the gritty.
Yeah.
And so, I think it was Johnny Rotten once said that he's like, you know, punk in America isn't necessarily that CBGB crowd. It's the hip hop from, you know, it's street music. It's street urban music. It's not meant to be, you know, and it might not sound exactly the same. You know, of course, a lot of that stuff crosses over each other. You know, the Beastie Boys came from
Beastie
that
Boys, great
hardcore
example.
Scene, but then they went on to becoming rappers and stuff. Back to Dylan, though. Oh, you're going to have to wait to get back to Bob Dylan. But not very long. The rest of our conversation will be ready to go next Tuesday. But you're welcome to listen early, either by becoming a patron at patreon.com/EPSpodcast or subscribing to the newsletter at epspodcast.substack.com. I hope you've enjoyed listening to what you've heard so far. Please join us next time for the EPS Podcast, where everything is a primary source.